My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now, a case that I think gripped the country for years was that of Tina Satchwell. First, when she was missing, would she be found? And then the murder case for her husband, Richard, eventually. It's the subject of a new book, The Murder of Tina Satchwell, and a journalist's journey into Ireland's most chilling cold case. Barry Cummins will be familiar to you from television screens on RT for over 20 years. He also was here at Today FM many, many years ago. Barry, you're very welcome back.
Thank you, Matt.
This case, this remarkable case, Tina Satchwell, there are loads of things to it, loads of angles to it. And the one, I suppose, I really want to start with, which is, I suppose, the most sensitive part of it is, how come it became a cold case that had to be re-examined? How come the Gardaí didn't solve this case very quickly when you could almost say it was sitting right under their feet?
Yeah, they went in June 2017 with a search warrant into that house in Youghal. The search warrant was quite specific. It was on suspicion of assault causing harm. They had brought it to that threshold by June of that year. So they had access to the house for 12 hours. Richard, by chance, wasn't in the house that morning when they arrived unannounced. It turned out he was up in Abbeyfield working that day, and they had to force the door open to get in. But they then had the house for 12 hours, and they conducted a thorough search for the type of search it was. It obviously wasn't the correct search, and it wasn't thorough in the sense that it didn't find Tina when she was there all along.
And just to remind people, she was buried under the stairs.
Yeah, she was buried face down under the stairs with concrete poured back in on top of her. A small fill of concrete which levelled out the floor that Richard had dug when he murdered his wife. He had dug out from under the stairs. And this was relatively easy to do because it was the soil from, the natural soil from that area close to the sea was the flooring within this house. So he dug it out over many hours, and he had placed Tina's body in there and then backfilled it with soil and then cement that he had. Because here's the thing, he was involved in renovating this house at the time. So he already had cement. He was doing bits and pieces to the house. He used what he already had to cover over the floor. He put lino on top of the floor and then he built a wall up by the side of the stairs. So originally you could get in under the stairs, walk in underneath those lower steps. The way he then built it, there was a wall and a cubbyhole door that you'd have to get through to get in under the stairs. So when Gardaí went in, the wall, it appears, was there.
And it was new, and would have looked new.
It was a new fill, and they were certainly, it was captured on the photographs that were taken by Gardaí when they went into the house.
But they're not suspicious of that?
Well, all we know is they didn't excavate, they didn't search beyond what they did do. And I suppose there's so many learnings in this, Matt. One of the things, they went into the house prepared to some degree, in that they arranged for scientists to come down from Dublin, from Forensic Science Ireland, to visit the house later that evening and do this particular test to see if there's blood spatter or blood trace within the house. So where they pull all the curtains, turn off all the lights and spray this material and then use whatever special lights where blood would show up if it was there. So they were looking for that. They were looking for evidence of assault causing harm specific to the warrant. It was not a murder investigation at that stage. But obviously, yes, looking back, that you would ask, how was it that it was 6.5 years before Tina was found? And it was a cold case review where I went into that house by the end of that first year, 2017, and I interviewed Richard in there. And I went into an unpleasant house. There was a lot of clutter. But I have to say, when I went in, I knew Gardaí had searched it, but I was, and nothing had been found. So I went in and I was of the mindset, well, this man might be the perpetrator, but I was wondering where might she be beyond the house.
And she was within feet of where you were recording an interview with him.
And I wasn't even thinking that clearly. I was thinking he was a long distance truck driver. Gardaí had already searched the house. His answers at different times in different interviews were odd. Could he be the person? He was there staring me in the face. I was wondering about his answers, but I wasn't thinking that there was an answer in the house. And that's what stayed with me as well.
Strikes us, Barry, that in as much as what sort of man murders his wife, what sort of man then buries the body in the house and just continues to live there? And he must have thought that after that initial search, that he was off scot-free, that he was going to live the rest of his life without getting caught for it.
Yeah, I think he became emboldened. Certainly, I had noticed nobody else had done an interview in the house for television. One or two print journalists had been in the house. One or two photographs had been taken where he had posed for photos, but there was no video footage of him in the house, no interview in situ. I knew she disappeared from within the property. The last reported sighting of Tina was from Richard. And I was looking at all this thinking, well, the house is the starting point. When I made contact with him, I was half inviting myself into the house. I knew I wanted to get in there. He immediately said yes. And just to think about that he buried his wife within the property, and he then was happy to have a journalist and a camera crew in the property. And also, we spent 2 hours there filming downstairs. He then invited me upstairs to look at the walk-in wardrobes that he had built for his wife. So I'm thinking back over that he brought us up the stairs. So we were walking above where Tina lay, up and down the stairs. He was in no rush to have us out of the property. And we stayed about 2 hours, did all the filming that we could, and then we left. And certainly he was an odd person, but nothing in his demeanour betrayed that the answer was so close or so obvious.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
But did you not think he was responsible? I mean, in one of two ways. I'll put it this way. Having also interviewed him, not face to face, but having done so over a Zoom link for television, he struck me as somebody who was quite enjoying all of the attention, who almost went out of his way to be interviewed, which made you think that, well, maybe she did leave because she'd had enough of his narcissism and wanted to get away, or more likely that he had murdered her and was confident that he had hidden her. No, I think most people thought he might have hidden her somewhere in the woods or something like that.
Yeah.
But whatever way about it is, I mean, there was no other suspect, was there? If something had happened to her, he was responsible.
Yeah, I came to that view over time. And certainly he was suspicious from the get-go. But because there was nothing to indicate a scene of violence in that first Garda search, and there was nothing else to show that this was being upgraded any stage soon to a murder inquiry, certainly his answers were odd. I met him 4 times for interview, so face-to-face. And each time I met him, I would find a different type of person. Sometimes he wouldn't make eye contact with me. Other times he would stare me out of it and he would just keep looking at me so that I felt uncomfortable and I'd kind of look away. And I did feel he was playing mind games with me. And with all that, I certainly thought he was enjoying the attention. But I was quite happy to keep with him and keep at him and keep asking him questions, because every time I met him, he would give some new answer or some new bit of information. And yes, I thought perhaps when it came to the search in Castle Martyr Woods in March of 2018, I thought maybe that might be an answer, because that came on foot of the media attention to the case. But sure, he knew. And he actually turned up and he looked through the bars of that where Gardaí had sealed it off. He was looking at this search, and sure, he knew they were in the wrong place. And some Gardaí knew by looking at him and his demeanour that day, they felt that they weren't going to find her in the forest.
And that then would also suggest, wouldn't it, that they would have felt that he knew what had happened to her and where she was buried. And he was relaxed because he knew they wouldn't find the body there.
Yeah, one Garda had said to me, and it might be an obvious thing, but they said to me, keep him talking. They were happy that media were talking with him and I was talking with Gardaí, and I was, all I wanted to do was find out the answer. What was the mystery? What was the answer there? And I was happy to keep talking with him and meet him in different ways. I met him in Yall, in Fermoy. We went and walked the dogs. And each time he was happy to be filmed and to do interviews on camera. And I was conscious of all this, that he was agreeable to be interviewed. And he liked television as well. And I was conscious of that. He seemed to have this idea. He was pitting the print media against broadcast. And
but Barry, you're a very experienced journalist and you've written many books about cold cases and missing persons. For you, what's it like to have spent so much time in the company of somebody who ultimately you discovered, yes, is a murderer? You're not a Garda, you're not a psychologist, you're a journalist.
Yeah, it's unsettling. I shook his hand many times, and to think that we were on the couch in that house and that he knew what was hidden behind the door behind my back. He was spinning all these lies and talking about his love for his wife. Yes, I came face to face with a murderer, but I came, as part of that, came face to face with somebody who lied to my face so many times with so many different comments. And it's unsettling. It's an education as well. I may well have come in the 20 plus years I've been working in crime reporting, may well have come face to face with other murderers. I don't know. This is the one person I can say that he was odd from day one. But I also tried to keep my mind open, because there are some people in different countries who have been charged with a crime that they haven't actually committed, but they fit the bill
because
and they
they're
never
odd
helped
in
themselves.
Their behavior.
Yeah, because they've been volunteering to do interviews, they've talked themselves into situations. And I was thinking Tina would have had every right to get out of that relationship because of what I could see as a stifling environment, troubling to some degree. And things that just didn't make sense.
Well, indeed, let's finish with Tina. I had intended talking to you about the use of the cadaver dog, which is so important, I think, to the fact that we don't have one on a Garda Síochána, but people can find out all about that in the book. But I do think we should finish, instead of concentrating all of our conversation on the perpetrator, the murderer, Richard, I thought the case, when it came to court, was dreadfully sad in what it told us about how Tina's life had been manipulated by him before she was ultimately murdered by him.
Yeah, and the whole area and issue of coercive control wasn't part of the prosecution evidence, but it became part of the overall picture, an overhang.
And the victim impact statement of her family.
That from both her sister, Lorraine, and her niece, Sarah, you could tell that they and others had joined the dots over recent years and could see that Richard Satchwell had isolated Tina, had taken her away from her larger and loving family, and had controlled her movements, in that he did the driving. He would drive Tina to swimming and to other places, that she didn't have...
Control her friendships.
Yeah, and this kind of subtle thing of he would always be with her, but would stick out his foot to walk on when he decided that the conversation was over and that she would then follow as part of that. And it came out in the court through the victim impact statements, the loss of Tina And the judge, I noticed when he passed sentence, I mean, it's an automatic life sentence. And Mr. Justice McDermott imposed that sentence, but he extended, and this really struck me, Matt, having heard all the evidence of all the control and all of that, he extended his sympathies to Tina Dingovan. He referred to her by her maiden name, the murder charge related to the murder of Tina Satchwell in March 2017. But the judge noted that her loved ones, the Dingovan family, present in court throughout the trial to speak on her behalf once the murder conviction was put in place.
We got to leave it there. Barry Cummins, thank you. The book is called The Murder of Tina Satchwell and A Journalist's Journey into Ireland's Most Chilling Cold Case.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.